This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho, featuring inspirational and fascinating personal stories of people from all corners of the globe who are now in St. Louis. We'll take a look at the U.S. through newcomers' eyes, get some insight into world history and cultures, and maybe learn something about ourselves. Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Welcome to Stories of New Americans. Tonight, I've got a guest from Canada, Tamara Kulish. Welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much, Ron. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it's our honor. And, you know, honestly, I didn't really even think about having Canada as one of the episodes in this show because I almost think of Canada as part of the United States. We're neighbors, we're similar. But based on some of the things that you told me about, you know, historical facts of Canada, that I wasn't really that aware of, I thought this would be a really interesting episode. So I want to talk about some of the English-French tensions over the years that is really fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. And normally we start these episodes with more of a historical overview, but I'd like to just kind of start with your childhood first, and then we'll kind of morph into the history. And we're not going to spend that much time in history, but I want to talk about some of the recent history. So let's start with your childhood, I guess. So where did you grow up in Canada?
I was born and raised in Montreal, Quebec.
Okay.
And Montreal was very much an English island in a French province within an English country. So, as you had alluded to, Quebec had wanted to separate from Canada. There were a lot of issues and tensions as a result. My father married my mother, who was of a British citizenship, so that allowed my brother and I to go to English schools. Even back then, if you didn't have parentage of English descent, English language descent, then you were automatically streamed to the French schools. So that was the criteria. My mother had to go to the school and present her paperwork in order for her children to be allowed to be educated in English.
So there were English and French schools,
yes.
But the default schools would be French unless there was a reason.
Correct. So, of course, all French people went to French schools. Any immigrants were winnowed. And so if a person came and perchance didn't have proof, they had to try and obtain it. If they couldn't, then their kids were automatically steered towards the French schools.
They had to have proof that they were of English heritage?
Or had been educated in English schools. So they could have come from a country where it's not typically seen as being English, but if they had been educated in English, then their children were allowed to be educated in English. It was very complex.
So if they came from, like immigrants from like Poland or Greece, they would probably go to French school unless there was a reason not to, right, the kids?
Exactly.
Wow. And were parents okay with that?
If you moved to Quebec, that was just the way it was.
Okay.
And it was all over Quebec.
Were there French schools in English parts of Canada too, or does this just happen in Quebec?
There were some French schools in some of the western provinces, but they were really minority because some of the French had settled in other provinces. But they were very much a minority.
And I think your father was Ukrainian, right?
Yes.
And I understand there's a pretty large Ukrainian community in Canada, I guess all over, not just in Quebec, right?
Yes. In the Midwest, there's a very strong Ukrainian community. Montreal was a smaller community. Toronto had a much larger Ukrainian community, even in comparison to Montreal. And when my father arrived in Montreal after the war, Second World War, he was one of the people in the community who were building the Ukrainian churches. There was, you know, starting of the Ukrainian Saturday school so that the kids could learn their parents' language and their history. Yeah.
And then did you grow up multilingual at your home?
Not at all. My mother being British, she only spoke the Queen's English. And she really struggled to learn other languages. She was having to learn French because she was living in Montreal. So even just going to the stores to be able to converse with the shopkeepers, she had to learn to speak French because there was this great animosity between the French and the English. So Ukrainian was her third language that she was struggling to learn. Her pronunciation was, I say, terrible. I'm laughing. No. But my brother, she tried. She really tried. But my brother and I, as little kids, we could hear the difference in how she was pronouncing the words. And to us, it just sounded too strange to our little ears for us to want to mimic her. And my dad had the idea that it was the mom's job to teach the kids. So he really had no hand in instructing us and teaching us Ukrainian.
How was his English?
His English was actually very good. When he first came to Montreal, he spoke no English. He had to learn it very quickly. And one of the ways that he learned English, he read comics.
A great way to do it.
And that he learned how. And then, you know, everybody in the Ukrainian community was very focused on learning English. And so they were helping one another. So I think that, you know, they found each other very quickly, and it was a great support for them.
Was your neighborhood or your immediate area kind of multicultural, or was it a lot of Ukrainians there?
No, not at all. My father, when he came to Montreal, he lived downtown, much more where the immigrants lived. My mother lived close by, I don't know which neighborhoods specifically that they lived in, but when they got married, they decided to move to the suburbs, that they wanted to raise their kids in the suburbs, that they didn't want to raise the kids in the city. So that was a decision that they made. They bought a house. And so the neighborhood that we lived in was mostly English speaking, a few French families on the street. And again, there was still the war. So the English kids were at war with the French kids. So we kept apart. We would throw stones at each other.
Isn't like literally, in the 70s, 60s, 70s?
Yeah, I was born in 62.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, we're going to get, I don't want to jump ahead because I want to talk about this a lot because this is fascinating to me. But so there was some tension among the families.
Yes, it was very volatile in those times. And, you know, like you said, we'll get into the politics of what was going on.
Let's talk about your schools. You went to English schools, I guess.
Yes.
And were they public? Were there Catholic schools there?
We went to English public school.
Okay.
There were Catholic schools, but my family wasn't Catholic. My mother was strongly against us going to Catholic schools. So we just went to the Protestant school system.
But that was public, right, I guess?
It was public schools.
Did that follow, like, the British system, or was it more, do you know, was it more American?
I think originally it probably was based on how the British did their school system, but then they branched out and they, of course, did their own thing later. But, yeah, it was probably based on the British.
Was your high school very rigorous? Was there you took a lot of classes and a lot of homework?
Well, I went to high school in the 70s, so it was a time, you know, culturally, it was a time where things were changing. It was rigorous, but not as rigorous as the private schools. But there was a lot of shenanigans, you know, people outside smoking. One kid was growing pot in his locker. It was, you know. Yeah,
it was our producer here.
It was interesting.
Okay, that was kind of a...
But it was the 70s. It was, yeah. Really, it was what was going on.
Yeah. Were you required to take a third language? I guess English students had to learn French and vice versa, but were you encouraged or required to take a third language too?
Some students did. Everybody had to take French as a second language. That was definitely a requirement if you're in the English schools. The optional stream was to do a French intensive, which they called French immersion. So the core classes were given in French. So math, English was given in English. French, of course, was given in French. But science, all the core classes were given in French.
In the immersion program.
In the immersion program. And then the all of the alternative classes were given in English. So it was, couldn't break it down if it was a 50-50 split, but I guess it was almost 50% okay. French.
During that time in the 70s, when you were in school, had you traveled to the United States?
Only a couple times.
And what was your impression of the United States? I'm assuming that a lot of your entertainment was American, like TV and music and movies.
A lot of it was. Some of it was Canadian programming. Back then, we only had two channels. And we weren't, my parents didn't pay for the cable TV. So had they paid, we would have brought in channels from Burlington and Albany, Vermont. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were the television shows, were there like some English and some French?
Yes. Well, there were two English stations in Montreal. I can't say for the rest of Canada, but in Montreal, there were two English TV stations. I believe that there were four or five French. There was a lot more choice that the French had, but they were not running any of the English programs or any of the American shows. They weren't even running it with English subtitles. It was all French programming that they were doing.
Were there rules? I thought I heard somewhere that there, I think it was Canada, there were rules about a certain percentage of entertainment had to be Canadian or domestic as opposed to American or foreign. Is that, am I misremembering that, as George Bush would have said?
I believe that you're right. But a lot of the American programming was on the cable shows that were brought in.
Okay.
And people would pay extra for that.
And like music, too. Pop music on the radio. Were there...
You know what? I was young then. I really wasn't paying attention to the rules. Yeah. Whatever was on the billboard.
Yeah.
We're playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's time for our first break, and this is a really good time because when we come back, I want to start talking about the historical things we've been alluding to now.
Sure.
And this will be a really, for me, interesting conversation. So,
yeah.
You're listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9, 94.1. We'll be right back.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
It goes like this. The fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Arnell's Hardwoods. For all of your laminate and hardwood flooring needs, call them at 314-397-3252.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by the Indoor Comfort Team. For all of your heating and cooling needs, call the Indoor Comfort Team at 314-230-9542.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back. We're talking with Tamara Kulish from Canada, and she was talking about growing up in a bilingual city, Montreal. But now let's turn to kind of what was going on in the 60s and the 70s in Montreal. And, well, I guess let's start with the FLQ. Can you talk about what that is and how that manifested itself in the 60s?
Sure. My first awakening to these issues, I think I was 6 or 7 years old. And there was a lot of news. My parents were glued to the radio and the TV because it was very tense times. The FLQ stands for the Fédération Libérale Québécoise, the Quebec Liberation Federation. And so they were very militaristic. They were doing bombings of a lot of government buildings. Any English elected government officials, from the mayor all the way up to provincial any of the members of parliament or anybody who was living in Montreal. So there was, or Quebec. So it was pretty widespread. There was a lot of violence. There was a lot of police run-ins, even with people on the street who would become very riled up, and they would start their own demonstrations and just throw Molotov cocktails through English-owned business windows. So it was very tense.
And their goal was independence for Quebec?
Yes, yes. Not just independence from Quebec, but to run out all of the English from Quebec.
We call that ethnic cleansing, right? That's what they called it in Bosnia.
You know what? This is the first time that I've really married that expression with what was going on. But I guess if you think about it, I mean, they weren't killing people, but they were definitely doing everything in their power to get people to move and to get rid of them, definitely.
Well, so, you know, most of Canada was and is English-speaking primarily, but this was the one province that was French-speaking. But let's go back a little bit. The French and English, I guess, fought in the 18th century over the territory, and basically the English won, right?
Yes.
And a lot of, this is kind of interesting little side fact, a lot of the French people left, I guess it was a different type of ethnic cleansing then, but a lot of French people resettled in Louisiana from, I guess, was called Acadia.
Right.
And that's how this Cajun people came about. This is the way they pronounce it in the South, but Cajuns are descendants of French refugees from Canada, I guess, right?
Right, exactly. And, you know, back then, the way that wars and any type of, if the conqueror, it was winner take all. So it was the British who had won the war, and the English, a lot of them were, you know, more in the richer upper levels to be able to own businesses and to run businesses. So the whole idea of we won and now everybody must do as we say, and everything must run according to how we dictate. That is a historical fact throughout, all British colonies. So, so definitely, I guess you could say that Quebec had been colonized.
And there was a lot of immigration from the British Isles then after that, right?
Absolutely. Those were the favorite places. And if other countries... It was there was a big throttle allowed from any of the British colonies, and the spigot really got turned off down to drip-drip to anybody else.
We kind of had a version of that, too, back before 65, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so where the French, I think you mentioned this to me sometime, the French in Quebec and Montreal were generally not as wealthy as the English in their, right? There was some kind of, I don't know if it was discrimination or just the way things panned out, but there were some economic disparities, right?
Oh, yes. The French church, unfortunately, didn't help the French cause because the French church really sought to keep their own people down. They encouraged extremely high birth rates. They discouraged any birth control. So right away, you know, when families are having 10 to 15 kids, that's a lot of mouths to feed. So even a salary that, you know, in a two-parent, two-child family would, you know, allow that family to live comfortably, when you're spreading it over so many people where you have all those clothes and food and, you know, school supplies, everything to buy, all of a sudden it plunges a family into poverty. And then the areas of Montreal where people could live were, I guess you could say, very strictly partitioned off. There were more on the west side of Montreal, it was more English, and the east end of Montreal was French. And so when you, I don't know what it is like now, I haven't driven through there in years, but when I did drive through, you know, even 20, 25 years ago, still more recent history, you could see that the houses were smaller, there weren't as many businesses. It's very much, I guess you could say, how North St. Louis is to the rest of St. Louis, if you want to have a good comparison.
Well, I was thinking it sounded like Belfast, Northern Ireland, with the, you know, the ethnic, and it, there's also a religious component to this, because
yes,
the French were Catholic, and I guess the English would have been Protestant.
They were mostly Protestant, yes, or Anglican.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. So there was some economic tension as well as political and linguistic.
Yes.
And then, so you were talking about the bombings, and so they were, this French FLQ organization was trying to basically, I guess, terrorize English speakers to leave, is that
right? Yeah, correct.
With these targeted bombings, and were they targeting English elected officials, did you say?
Yes.
And judges?
Primarily they were, and anybody who they thought was an activist for the English cause, they were targeting. I was still a little kid. When I was about 6 or 7, all of us kids from the neighborhood, we went down to the main road where we saw the National Guard tanks rolling down the road. And that was a huge wake up for everybody to realize that the army was being rallied and being brought out to the streets to be able to keep order.
Did that work? Did things kind of calm down for a while?
It's been touch and go. It was touch and go then, and in all the years since. While there hasn't been the level of violence that we saw in those days, the passion that many of the separatists hold in their hearts is still very strong.
There was something they call the October Crisis of 1970, when they kidnapped a couple of officials, British diplomat, right, and the labor minister. And then that, I believe, you know, the government responded forcefully and kind of got rid of a lot of the FLQ.
They managed to round a lot of them up and put them in jail. I don't know where things stand, if some of them are still in jail, because the crimes, Pierre Laporte was killed,
right?
So that was murder. And then there was all of the issues of domestic violence. So I don't know you know, how many years they got.
But that is that organization kind of defunct now? Or are they still a legal entity that...
They tried to become a political party for a while, if I understand correctly. I think that they've mostly gone under the radar.
That didn't morph into the Parti Québécois. Is that different?
I think that a lot of the founding members of the Parti Québécois probably either were members of the FLQ or were sympathizers. But their passions were very much along the parallel lines.
Well, what was it like as a student then for you? Did the English kids, English-speaking kids, talk badly about the French? Was there a lot of animosity or hatred? Or did you go in each other's neighborhoods, and not you, but some young people kind of fight? And
I think that the older kids may have. I mean, my brother and I was, he's younger than me. We were too young to do that. My mother was very strict. So that would have been out of the realm of possibility for us. But I think that the older kids definitely did.
But then after they arrested some of these members, you say things kind of calmed down. And there were at least two referendums for independence.
And yes.
Talk about those and when they were and how they panned out.
Well, the referendum was, the question was, do you want to separate from Quebec, yes or no?
You want to separate from Canada?
Do you want to separate from Canada? I'm sorry, yes. And it was just a yes or no question. The first referendum, they lost by, I don't know, it was
I've got
fairly...
here, it was 1980, they lost 59.56% to 40.44%.
Okay, so it was, you know,
fairly close. Yeah.
Fairly close. The second referendum, they lost, I think, by a larger margin. And by then, I think that they were 10 years apart, if I'm not mistaken.
I wrote down 1995, the second vote, they lost less than a percentage point, 50.58%. No to 49.42, yes.
Right. So the first referendum actually ended up plunging Quebec into a depression. The officials were calling it a recession, but what was happening was any American companies that were coming in as investors or co-owners, they pulled back. There was very little business that was being done with any of Quebec companies. It just seemed too precarious to do business with any of the French companies. In addition, there were the label laws where anything that was being imported into Quebec from American companies had to have bilingual labels where, you know, up till that point, the American companies had only labeled in English. So this became a financial burden for them to create special labels only for the province of Quebec.
It was on the American exporting companies to provide that. It was
if they wanted to be able, yes, if they wanted to be able to do business in Quebec, they had to pick up the costs. So there were some that refused. But others still saw enough sales potential to eat the costs of creating these separate labels.
Ask you here the vote was pretty close, but you said there are more English speakers than French speakers in Quebec, I guess, right? Maybe you're talking about Montreal.
Well, in Montreal, there were more English speakers,
but in Quebec,
originally.
More French, right?
In the outlying areas of outside of Montreal, it was almost 100% French.
So not all French people wanted to separate, obviously.
They did not, because the whole province was plunged into a deep depression, where they themselves found it difficult to find work. There were massive layoffs and firings. After the second referendum, I had worked in the engineering field, and again, there was another slump where the American engineering and companies that were coming in to do projects were no longer wishing to bankroll, and so even engineering companies were laying off people. And I had been working doing drafting, and I got laid off because there just wasn't the work.
I don't remember even hearing about this stuff in those days. I don't know if that was even commonly known here. Anyway, we need to take another break, and then we're going to come back and talk more. This is Stories of New Americans on Newstalk STL 101.9 94.1.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on Newstalk STL.
It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Samim Afghan Restaurant, featuring traditional Afghan cuisine and conveniently located on Manchester Road in the Grove.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you by Hacking Law, for individuals who want to come and stay in the U.S. Hacking Law fights for immigrants every day. Visit them at hackingimmigrationlaw.com.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on Newstalk STL.
Welcome back. We're talking with Tamara Kulish from Canada. I'm wondering if you think Canada or Quebec will ever become independent. Do you think there's going to be additional referendums in the future, and will it just...
I don't think so. They, after the second loss, the second referendum where they did not win, there was a massive kind of reshuffling of how they were going to approach it. And so they realized that they were not going to take over English companies or be able to run them out, because there was still enough business that was being done. So Francophones were quietly gaining positions in human resources. And so once they were in human resources, they were only hiring Francophones. And so that became very difficult. As an Anglophone, I had worked in well-paying jobs. I had done drafting. I had done graphic design. I had well-paying jobs. And then all of a sudden, it kind of fell off a cliff where I wasn't able to find work. And it wasn't based on any lack of experience or lack of ability. I was given a university level French test take, and I would get about an 85, and they would come back and they'd say, you know, an 85% wasn't good enough for them, and so I wasn't hired. So all of a sudden, where I had been working in well-paying jobs, I couldn't find work. I had a Francophone friend who, she was French, from a French family. They were not elite, so she hadn't gone to French private schools. She had gone to French public schools. She had an opportunity through her employer at that time to look at the tests. These were tests that were prepared for by the government. And she had a look at one of the tests, and she says, "Tamara, I've gone to French schools. I'm French speaking." She says, I would struggle to answer these questions and to do well on this test. She said, because she had never gone to university. So it was a very high, high level of French that was expected.
At one time, would it have been reversed? Were the English kind of controlled that kind of
stuff? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what was done to the French people. And so now the shoe was on the other foot. And so absolutely, everything that had been done to the French people, they remembered everything, yep. And they returned the favor.
Yep.
and then some, probably.
Well, what's it like now? Is it called the parliament, the provincial government?
Yes.
Is that bilingual, or how does that operate?
I haven't been keeping up to see how it is now. I have, still some friends that I keep in contact with. None who have remained in Quebec. They have all left either to Ottawa or Toronto. But they are keeping up with things and have, friends who live in Montreal. And so every so often they'll post a newspaper article from the French press, and and then there they get very irate how the French government is still pushing these issues, how they're still creating angst for the few remaining English businesses that are there. The signage in all of the businesses has to be bilingual, but the French wording on the physical signage has to be at least 50% larger.
Really?
Yes, than the English. And if there's any other languages on the sign, let's say if it's Chinese or any other language, those could be 4 foot high and whatever they want.
And is that like that today still too?
There still is. Those are the laws. They have what they call the Office de la langue française, which is the Office of the French Language. And the people who work there are colloquially called the French language police, because they are the ones who are the feet on the street to go out to the businesses. And there are steep fines. So if one of the French language police goes into a business and finds that the signage is not conforming to the laws, and they have measuring tapes, and they do take out their measuring tapes. I'm not kidding. It sounds cartoonish, but they give a fine for the first one, and each subsequent fine is exponentially harder and harder. And they've run small businesses, mom and pop businesses, out of business. Because the mom and pop businesses have stood the ground and refused. We refuse to comply.
Yeah.
They've been run out of business because they can't pay the fines, and they get shut down.
So they're actually government officials whose job it was to make sure that the signage was.
Yes, and it still is. It's still happening. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I guess. Okay. Now, Canada is an fully independent country, but I believe it's still part of the British Commonwealth, right? Maybe not. But what does that mean? What is that? What's in it for a country that's in the British Commonwealth? Do they get, like, I guess the king is their sovereign or their head of state, but do they? I guess can you freely immigrate to another country in the British Empire, like UK or?
I think that if you are of parentage, then you could. I believe that my brother and I, we could apply to move to England if we wanted to. We would have to prove that our mom was a citizen. I don't think that those same privileges reach across to everybody. I think that it's if you have the heritage. Certainly, the Queen's face was on the money, and now it would be the King's face on the money. They have no say over any governance.
The British don't?
The British have no say over any governance over Canada. Canada was an independent country and had, formulated itself as such. So really it's just a figurehead. It's just symbolic.
Okay. Let's talk about how and when and why you ended up coming to the United States. How did that start?
Sure. Well, I met an American, and we fell in love.
Okay.
He, and I'm referring to him in the past tense because he is now deceased. But that's okay. Thank you. He had been working in the film industry in Quebec, and Montreal was actually a hive of film industry activity for many, many years, because old Montreal can double for many cities in Europe, and there's many of the of the more up-to-date modern parts of the city that double for New York City, Chicago, and for other American cities. So there was a lot of film work that was being done. And so the crews for to do these, there was quite a lot of a film crew who were working on these films. It was typical in Montreal that there could be anywhere from, 4 to 10 feature films being filmed around the city in a given season. So that was very common. Streets would be cordoned off sometimes for film work that was being done. He had made a very good living for about 20 years working in the film industry in Montreal. Then the Quebec government, the Petit Québécois at the time, they decided that they wanted to boost the French film industry. So they cut the English film credit in half. And meanwhile, they doubled the French film credit. So the idea was that they were trying to dissuade all of the American feature film makers from coming to Montreal to make films and to go elsewhere. And they were trying to really to try and build up a French feature film industry in Montreal. They wanted to equal what was happening with the English film industry. So what had happened was with the film credit being cut, other provinces doubled their film credit. So they ended up wooing away these feature films. So then Calgary and Vancouver became the two hot spots for feature filmmaking.
You're talking about many American.
Yes, exactly. That's where the big money was. And so because the market had really dropped off a cliff and there were no more English feature films being made in Montreal, I could work anywhere. I was working in an office, but he had to relocate. So we were at the time contemplating Calgary or Vancouver. And then he perchance went down to visit his brother in Tucson, Arizona. And Tucson used to have a live feature film market. They had, Gunsmoke and all types of things had been filmed out there. So they were looking to resuscitate their film industry. And my brother-in-law was a writer, and he was very connected with the folks who were keen on making this happen. So they told some embellishments to encourage him to move. They said, "Oh yes, there's a lot of film work being done." They forgot to mention that it wasn't big budget feature film work. That it was low budget films that were being done. Low budget, I mean, like they were actually $50,000 and under, whereas my husband had been accustomed to working on films that, were $20 million in budget. So it was a big difference.
Did he realize that after he made the move?
We only found out afterwards. We only found out about that afterwards.
Oh.
But, basically he was wooed to move to Tucson, and he had come back from that trip, and he's like, "Hey, how about we move to Tucson?" I'm like, "What?" I honestly hadn't heard of it. And he said, oh, you know, there's a growing film industry that's happening. And it's just a short plane ride to L.A. And with my, and he says, you know, with all of his feature film experience, it'll be no problem to find work. So we made the move. And then
so you went to Tucson first.
Yes. Yes.
And then how soon did he find out?
Oh, in the first short while, because whenever somebody who works in the film industry goes to another city, whether it's America or in the U.S. or whether it's in Canada or overseas, right, there's a film office in every single city. They have a film office. And so professionals will go and register themselves with the film office and provide their resume, their everything, all of their experiences on imdb.com, so that's easily verifiable. And then they're put into what's called a book. So any feature film company that's coming in will hire local people from the book. Well, my husband was told he could not register in the book because he wasn't a Tucson native. He said, well, I'm a Tucson resident now. No, a Tucson born.
It sounds like what you tried to get away from in Canada.
Yes. Yes. So some of the same things that there was the language issue. So in Quebec, it was the French English. In Tucson, it was English Spanish. And then and because it was so close to the border and with illegal immigrants coming over, there was all of these border issues and border tensions and the them and us mentality. The extremes of temperature.
that must have been really hard.
That was a huge adjustment.
Well, yeah, we're running out of time, unfortunately, but I did want to ask you, like, your first impressions of life in the United States. Mm-hmm. Was, besides the climate, I guess, that was a huge change. Did you have any other adjustment problems?
I really did my best to blend. So I did my best to drop the typical Canadian.
You don't say a boot anymore or a?
I said a all the time, and I had to learn to say, huh? That was a big thing. But actually, most Canadians don't say a boot. That's more of a maritime thing. But my daughter's fiance laughs when we say about. About. Well, we say it because my mother was British, and she wrapped our knuckles if we didn't pronounce it, you know, the correct way. So, yeah.
That's kind of a running joke for American comedians when they talk about Canadian dialect or whatever. Are there any stereotypes or jokes that Canadians have about us in the last 15 seconds we have here?
The ugly American tourists.
Okay.
The loud, the obnoxious. Yeah, that's unfortunately a stereotype.
And how do you feel now? Do you feel American? Do you feel Canadian? Do you feel both? You like this is home now?
It feels like home now, but I still feel Canadian. So I guess it's about half-half. Mm-hmm. I think I was in my early 40s when I moved to the U.S., so it's hard to completely, you know, remove.
Yeah.
Your first nationality.
Yeah. Do you go back to visit sometimes? Do you have relatives there still?
I have my brother in Toronto. And then my mother left Quebec. And she's living about 3 hours.
You said about? About 3 hours. Not as strong as some, but I did hear a little Canadian about there.
Funny.
Okay, anyway. So she's living about 3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I wish we had more time to talk. I have a lot more, a lot more I wanted to talk about, but we're going to have to end it there because we're out of time, unfortunately. But I want to thank you for coming and sharing your story. And I really found this interesting. So thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL 101.9, 94.1. Thank you for listening.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.